Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network USA. I am delighted indeed to welcome Alison Metcalf, who is head of North America Tourism Ireland, with many other titles, but we won't use words like whiz. Absolutely not on this program anyway. Alison, you're very welcome.
Thank you, Adrian. Great to be back, and Happy New Year.
Thank you, and to you too. The burning question I have is there a figure out there somewhere that in the future year will spell out saturation with tourists and tourism to Ireland?
Well, I think, first of all, if I can just say from a North American perspective, we've seen, as you know, 5 years of record growth, and we're just reporting on having welcomed 1.8 million visitors, spending 1.6 billion in 2017. I think organizationally, obviously, all markets are doing well, Europe, North America, and a slight decline in Britain. But I think when we look at, and we are trying to address your point around saturation, I don't think we're at saturation point. I think there's huge opportunities in Ireland to spread visitation around the island of Ireland. And we at Tourism Ireland, as part of our new strategy that we'll be launching this week, is looking at those opportunities to develop new experiences in different parts of the country, working very closely with our sister agencies, the national development agencies, both Fáilte Island and Tourism Northern Ireland. So there's a huge opportunity to spread the traffic. There's also great opportunities around seasonality. As you know, part of our significant growth over the last 5 years has been the onboarding of a huge increase in direct air capacity. We now have, across North America, 21 gateways delivering more than 64,000 seats each week. So within that, there's a huge opportunity to grow business, but the bigger challenge is to keep those planes full all year round. So one of the priorities we focus on over the last 5 years is to extend the season. And I'm pleased to say that, you know, the visitation in quarter one, which is, you know, January, February, March, and October, November, December, we're seeing great increase in visitation from North America. And if I can give you an example, in November, for example, just this past November, we saw a 19% increase in North American visitors. 5 years ago, we would never have seen the kind of volumes of traffic. So I think it's something that the industry have to look at very carefully. I think we have to, you know, look at what type of visitors we want. All I can speak on behalf of the North American market is that this market delivers long-staying, high-spending visitors, quality visitors. So it's about getting balance, and it's about looking at what we can do to spread the traffic into the regions and extend the season, I think.
We, for many years, we talked about, and indeed Tourism Ireland promoted it, shoulder seasons. Now that we are looking at a 365-day season and a tourism season, how do you identify? I know what we do. We automatically assume that that means lower airfares. Beyond that, how do you identify the shoulder season?
Well, for us in North America, I mean, I think the shoulder season has very much become sort of November through March. September and October are very strong months for us now. I think from a consumer perspective, why would you visit in the shoulder season? As you rightly pointed out, there are lower airfares, but it's less crowded. The cost of accommodation is obviously less. We like to call it the smart season, actually, because I think people are used to traveling to Europe in those shoulder months. Everything is open, certainly in the cities. As we move into the regions, we're seeing more and more of our key attractions opening year-round, and in fact, many of them are open year-round. So again, it comes back to the point I made earlier, is as businesses see increased demand for visitation in November and right the way through March, So demand is growing. I think another factor is the events and festivals. I mean, people, when they're traveling, they want things to do and see. And I think we have great cultural festivals happening in Ireland. A Youth Trad Fest, which is a wonderful festival in Dublin at the end of January, a great time to go. The Dublin Theatre Fest in the autumn is another great time to go. There's opera festivals, jazz festivals. And I think when people are looking at where to travel, they're looking for destinations that are vibrant and there's lots of things to do. So the benefits are lower costs, but I think that there's also benefits around destinations being less busy, and there's an opportunity really to engage in a very authentic way with Ireland, because people, and any destination, people have more time for you, you know, as you travel around the world.
Well, one of the very successful campaigns, which was music to the ears of those of us west of the Shannon, was the promotion of the Wild Atlantic Way. As we look back on tourism from North America, in particular those tourism figures, that was actually a turning point. But it wasn't just a campaign. Tourism Ireland, Fáilte Ireland, actually put a lot of work into it. The Wild Atlantic Way has been around for longer than most of us. But the actually the signage, the efforts in Ireland to do more than just have a nice scenic route, that was a campaign actually which kick-started something that became very permanent.
Absolutely, and you're right, the Wild Atlantic Way has always been there. I think what we've done is when people travel, they're looking for experiences. So bringing the Wild Atlantic Way into sort of a marked route, the signage is obviously very important, but I think the more important point is that what it's done is it's actually engaged local communities as well as tourism providers to provide those unique experiences. So when you look at the reasons that inspire North Americans to travel to Ireland, typically they think of rugged coastlines. They think, you know, if you think of the number of Americans, they don't all live on the coast. Like we're here in New York, they don't all live on the West Coast. They think of that rugged coastline, and that's one of the major brand experiences, I think, that puts Ireland on their consideration set. So I think you're right. We have done an awful lot to promote the Wild Atlantic Way, but it is golf along the Wild Atlantic Way. It is food along the Wild Atlantic Way. Some of those authentic experiences, food trails, markets, It's foraging along the Wild Atlantic Way. It's castles along the Wild Atlantic Way. And what I think it's done for the industry in Ireland is it's actually given them something to hitch their wagon to. So when we have hoteliers coming out here or attractions, the one thing they're very proud to say is that we are located on the Wild Atlantic Way. As the longest marked touring route in the world, hard to believe, Ireland's a small country, but if you go into every nook and cranny, we're also looking to ensure that we give people reasons to not only tour the entire route, because I mean, some people might do that, but to bring people, you know, again, back to my point of spreading traffic north of Galway, bring them up into the northwest, Sligo, Donegal, etc. And it's been very, very powerful in doing exactly that. And there's businesses now that, 5 years ago would not have been as dependent on tourism as they are as a result of this particular brand experience. So, yes, it's been successful, and now we are looking to see similar success with Ireland's Ancient East, again, giving people more things to do and see.
Now, when for many decades, we all appreciated and promoted tour operators, and some might say that that Tourism Ireland has kind of taken the model of the tour operator. So as you rightly point out, the longest route and coastal route in the world is not it's not something you just do unless you're trying to make the Guinness Book of Records. But you are, and you have managed to section out that Wild Atlantic Way. I know I should be getting to the Ancient East, but being from Mayo, that's very difficult. Tell us about how those are mapped out. What would the incentive be, say, for somebody who does the Northwestern? What is it? What's the incentive then to do what some might think is more of the same?
Well, I think since this is the Northwest, what we're finding is it's been a great opportunity to encourage people to come back to Ireland for the second time. So very often when people come for the first time, they don't always make it up to the Northwest or to Northern Ireland. We're trying to change that, obviously, for all visitors.
Sure.
But for repeat visitors, it's given them something new to explore. So again, if they're interested in, you know, Literary Island, you've got Yeats Country, you've got wonderful hiking trails, you've got great golf, and if we even think about some of the activities up around Donegal and the Inishowen Peninsula, the Irish Open is going there this year, and who would have thought that, you know, 10 years ago? So the incentive is that it's easy to get to. I mean, if you're flying into Dublin or Belfast, certainly the northern part of the Wild Atlantic Way is very accessible. If you're coming from Dublin, you know, great highway across to Galway, and then you,
sure,
you can travel north. Equally so, it's less travelled. I mean, the further north you go, it is less travelled, it is less crowded, and you have some of the most spectacular scenery. I mean, Donegal was voted by the Lonely Planet as the coolest place on earth to visit. So certainly,
yeah, but you have a special draw there for Donegal now, in the interest of complete and utter exposure. You do like you yourself have a great affinity for Donegal.
Well, in Northern Ireland, I suppose, yes, and Donegal brings her family there, but brings you into the northwestern corner for sure. But I think, you know, with the Wild Atlantic Way, what it's doing is it's pulling if people further north. It's also encouraging more people then to continue around onto the Causeway Coast through Derry, Londonderry, and onto,
sure,
the Causeway Coastal Route. And I think scenic touring routes are what Americans are looking for, what they like to,
yeah,
do, whether they're traveling independently or whether they're traveling on an escorted tour. So what is the incentive? Back to your question, the incentive is to see some great scenery, to see some wonderful heritage, to get a really authentic experience. It's great if you love outdoor activity, surfing, golfing, hiking. There's no better place like it.
Equestrian centres.
Equestrian centres, exactly. Likewise, if you're looking to tour south of Dublin and come around to the southwest of Ireland, I mean, Kerry and up to Clare and everything, equally unique experiences. But again, it depends on how much time people have and
right,
what time of the year they're travelling. But we are finding the Wild Atlantic Way is a big hit with Americans. And when they think of Ireland, they think of that rugged Wild Atlantic Way.
When you have massive increases for 5 years in a row from North America, do you find that that somewhere, would say within that 5-year period, that there are tourists who actually come back? And maybe is that a statistic that is meaningful?
It is. We do have repeat visitors, and we have very high satisfaction levels. People, when they travel to Ireland, they have a great time, and we measure this type of thing. We ask them what they think Ireland is going to be like before they visit, and a whole basket of criteria, everything from do they think the people will be friendly, will there be great scenery, will there be lots of things to do and see, and what do they think about the food. And then we measure the same things when they come back, and the satisfaction levels are excellent. In most occasions, their experiences have exceeded their expectations before they went to Ireland. About 22-24% of visitors to Ireland are repeat visitors, so that's only really 1 in 5. It's not because they don't have a great time.
Yeah, yeah.
Americans just have limited holiday, and there's lots of places to go. For some Americans, they don't start traveling perhaps until they're close to retirement, or so they have a lot of the world to cover. But we are seeing an increase, and I think we're also seeing, I know we're seeing an increase in younger travellers visiting the island of Ireland. And those younger travellers, they're kind of a younger, culturally curious traveller. If they're travelling now in their early 30s, they're going to come back as they become young professionals and boomers and things. They're going to have very good experiences, and they are also travelling in larger numbers in the shoulder season. So again, back to the point about how do we spread the traffic, how do we manage the capacity situations that you referred to, they love to travel between that October and March. And what we're trying to do is say to them, instead of going to the West Coast, going to San Francisco, going to Los Angeles, or going to Iceland, or going to Vegas, why not come to Ireland? It's doable. You leave on a Thursday, back on a Tuesday. It's those types of experiences that that are also opening up new opportunities for us.
We thought at one point when the super highways were coming into Ireland, that in fact that might have somewhat of a negative effect on remote areas or areas that heretofore would have been well travelled anyway, getting from point A to point B. the opposite actually has occurred.
That's right. It's really what it's done is it's shrunk the country. I mean, it means that people can get around a lot faster. Having said that, Americans' perception of distance, I think, is different to ours. Obviously,
I'm only getting used to them myself.
So they, you know, going into planning an itinerary, they might think they can travel from A to B a lot quicker than they can. Obviously, on the highways they can, but the highways will move them around from, you know, Dublin to Galway to Killarney to wherever up to Belfast. But to have a real experience, obviously, we're encouraging them to get off the beaten track. And that's what they want to do. They want to go down all those rural roads. They want to sort of have their car stopped because they're running into a traffic jam of sheep, which they've seen on postcards and things and all of those stereotypical images. But they still want to experience the real Ireland. So it has made the country smaller, which means that, you know, two things. It means you can cover a lot more at one level, but I don't think it's taken away from the desire of North Americans to want to sort of get off the beaten track and spend time just exploring and engaging with local people and regional experiences.
Ireland's ancient east obviously has been there a long time. However, it is now a tremendous attraction, not only for tourism, but within Ireland itself. Those who have lived in Ireland for all their lives are actually benefiting and cashing in on the great facilities, on the great experiences of Ireland's ancient East. Where does it begin? Where does it end?
Ah, good question. Actually, Siobhan, do you want to just clarify that for me specifically? It begins in, is it Meath?
It begins up in County Louth.
County Louth.
And then sweeps right back down to East Cork. But the thing about the Ireland's ancient East is about great stories. So it's about unique stories that are told by the world's greatest storytellers. So I think the thing about Ireland's ancient East is it doesn't have a hard beginning and an end because great stories exist everywhere within that area. So it is that the history of Ireland can be told right back from the pyramids, you know, older than the pyramids in Newgrange, right up into very recent history in closer to Dublin.
I'll have to back into introducing you because Siobhan McManamy.
McManamy, yeah. It's unusual, that one.
I know, but if you... Yeah, it could be worse. You could have a name like Flannelly, which about 1 in 10 get right because they assume that we're Flannerys, and actually we're not. And all the Flannerys that are out there are actually, they're all fakes, every last one of them, because the original name was Flannelly. But I can understand now in my tender age, why most people, you know, call it Flannery to begin with. It's a lot easier to pronounce than that. So McManamy.
No,
all right, thank you. All right, we'll practice this afterwards. a rather an unusual name.
It is. It's from Sligo. My father's from Sligo, but it originally came from the Belfast name Courage. And then travelled over. But lots of our cousins are variations of McManamy. So they're McMenemies and Mac, all different spelling names of it. But yeah, no, McManamy was the version they settled on in Sligo.
Well, again, you're very welcome.
Thank you very much.
First time meeting here. And Director of Markets. That doesn't sound like very parochial job.
No, cover the world. So it's great to be here in North America, which has been a real star performer for us for the last few years. But yeah, no, look after. We are active in 23 markets, 23 countries around the world. So look after those with excellent teams in all of them. So
some of those markets are relatively new in terms of the push from Tourism Ireland. When we hear China, when we hear of places, you'd say, well, how many and how do you get to that number of people, and does most of it have to do with golfing in Ireland? Can you just walk us through a little bit of that?
Sure, and it's a week for us. Niall Gibbons, who you've met before, our chief executive, is in Hong Kong at the moment because we'll have our first direct flight from Asia to Ireland starting in June this year with Cathay Pacific from Hong Kong. So as people have easier and quicker ways to get directly to Ireland, it's really expanding the scope of where we can be active. But in China, things like Star Wars, Game of Thrones are all really resonating. So people who may not know that much about Ireland, but certainly know a lot about those TV programs and films. Also, golf is, you know, we're world renowned for golf, and people have a once-in-a-lifetime desire to play golf in Ireland. That's really helping with that, with, you know, building the presence of Ireland and people knowing more about Ireland and those further-flung destinations.
How significant is it that, because of perhaps because of the uncertainty of Brexit and what that's going to mean, Ireland was always the beneficiary, particularly for tourism, from Britain. And in fact, whereas the all the forecasters of, you know, assumed that the Brits were not going to go anywhere until the dust settles, there has been a decrease, but I mean it's not a wipeout by any means.
No, it's certainly not, and what we're seeing is that the growth we're seeing from mainland Europe and North America is more than making up for the slight decrease we are seeing from Britain. In Britain, we're seeing, of course, Northern Ireland is a domestic destination, but we're seeing as a short destination, and people come for their shorter breaks, and that's still continuing. So there is a small decrease, but certainly 2017 was a record year for tourism to the island of Ireland, and we're projecting another strong year for 2018.
That's a habit that you've developed over the years.
Well, I hope it can continue.
Yeah, raising the bar, you know. Some would say you don't know when enough is enough, but actually it is. Ireland has to be doing something right to have not only the increase each year, but the you know, the level of satisfaction. Again, I doubt if that would transfer to, you know, say, many other countries, European countries, anyway.
Well, I can obviously only speak on behalf of Ireland, and I do interact with quite a number of our European colleagues, but I think hospitality is in our DNA. I think, you know, the welcome and the desire that people have a great time in Ireland is in our DNA. And everybody that interacts with people, everything from the taxi driver to the guide and the attractions, the hoteliers, etc. So I think that we are fortunate to have, obviously, great satisfaction levels. But I would also attribute it to two or three other things. First of all, I think ongoing investment in marketing tourism. I think, you know, tourism is obviously high on the economic agenda for both governments, both in the Republic of Ireland and in Northern Ireland. Obviously, it's not a tourism island, it's an island by an agency and a byproduct of the Good Friday Agreement. So through thick and thin, we have, you know, we have invested in markets like North America and other markets. We feel we have enough marketing investment? No, we don't. Are we spending as much as we used to spend 5 years ago? No, we're not, but we're making those dollars work harder. We're making sure that, you know, obviously with digital marketing, we can make those dollars go further. But if we look at the North American situation, I mean, even 5 or 6 years ago, we had very much fewer air gateways. Now we're trying to market across the continent where we have direct access from 21 gateways. So,
right.
So we're doing more with less, but I think it's fair to say that we have continued to invest through thick and thin, whereas some of our competitors have not. And as a result of that, we have managed to gain market share here. 1 in 10 Americans traveling to Europe travel to Ireland, so 10%. It might be even slightly higher this year. It's not to say that it isn't a fiercely competitive market. It is becoming increasingly competitive, hence the need that we need to continue to make sure our dollars work as hard as possible. And the other big factor, I think, is the air access position that I mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
You can't get there. It's really hard to grow business when you're in Ireland. So having that air access and having strong relationships with the carriers, working with them to make sure that planes are full 12 months of the year so we sustain those services is really important. So investment, air access, obviously a great professionals on the ground, but I think just the people of Ireland, we've got hospitality in our DNA, and then the quality of our visitor attractions and experiences, the investment, the capital investment that has gone in by sister agencies and by the private sector. You need world-class things to do and see. That's the expectation now. So if we can deliver on all of those four fronts, and if we can continue to deliver, the prospects are good, certainly from North America, economically. Things are looking good. Consumer confidence is high. So we need to go out there and continue to fight for our share of that tourism dollar.
Tourism and employment, jobs, Siobhan, I'll come back to you. It has a very significant affect not only, you know, we talk about in dollars the amount of input and the great result that has for the economy in Ireland. Part of that, of course, is that the tourism sector in Ireland continues to grow in terms of jobs, directly and indirectly.
And was the fastest contributor to jobs growth over since the crash. And I think the difference about tourism jobs is they're right throughout the island. They're in every small community.
Right.
And they really help small communities thrive and stay together. And what we're seeing now is really good initiatives where the tourism industry work closely together, and that's part of our success, is that the government and the industry work very closely together. So communities like Loophead and Clare, they've come together to make sure there's something happening on the ground 12 months of the year by businesses working together to have Irish music in one pub a night rather than every pub trying to do it every night, and that sense of community and working together.
Now tell us about Fáilte, Ireland. For those who might figure that Fáilte is that great magnet for the entire world, but within Ireland itself, you have regional tourism bodies that have to, despite your reference there to how everybody's pulling together, I know if I were in a region of Fáilte, Ireland, in Ireland, I would be doing everything that I could do to keep people exactly where they are for once you get them into your region.
Yeah, and I guess our aim in Tourism Ireland is to make sure there's more than enough tourists to go around, so every region is getting more than their fair share. It is, and I think Alison spoke of it earlier, every part of Ireland has its own unique story to tell, and there's something that, you know, that really grabs it. So we work very closely with our colleagues in Fáilte, Ireland, and they're working on a 10-year development plan at the moment that we're working closely with them to make sure that Irish tourism continues to thrive and that the product is there that the overseas visitor wants. So we act as a voice of the overseas consumer, and they work with us to deliver that on the ground.
When you're talking about a 10-year development plan, that's not just a blueprint on a table. You're looking towards what categories,
So you'd be looking at things like, you know, what could be something a really attractor of real significance up in Donegal that could encourage people to travel there throughout the year, and making sure that the tourism infrastructure is right. And it goes for everything from how you get around the island of Ireland to what will people want in years to come. So you're seeing a growth in people just wanting time away from it all. And how do we make sure that we're ready for that? Because what visitors want changes all the time, and it evolves and emerges. And there's a real authenticity is now what's really important to people, that they're not being sold an experience that's not very authentic to where they're going. So it's about training the industry and getting them fully on board and making sure the investment is going in the right direction.
You wouldn't even have to go back a decade when we thought we believed, whether it was accurate or not, that when we were talking about development for tourism, we were talking about hotels. We were talking about more places where people, if they came into areas like in some parts of the west of Ireland, if you had an attraction like, say, Knock and Ireland West Airport, that was fine, but accommodation hotels in particular were few and far between and not nearly enough for the peak seasons. And but the development of alternative accommodation, that fills a huge gap that many of us are not really aware of.
It really does, and I think, you know, County Mayo is a perfect example of where you can create...
Thanks for bringing it up.
The Great Western Greenway was a real example of disused railway line that now has visitors going there throughout the year. And you know, there are that alternative accommodation like glamping, and all of that is being developed along the Western Greenway now, because that's something you can do January to December. It's not just a peak tourism project. So it's projects like that that are off scale, and that was replicated in Dungarvan last year. And so it's that idea that you can take what's there and make it better and then make it more economic driver. And I suppose what it all comes down to is it's bringing money into, and that's quite a large community. It's bringing a lot of additional businesses. I think the last figure was 58 smaller businesses developed along the Greenway to generate more.
I was going to ask Alison, but I'll put you on the spot instead.
Oh, no.
from Tourism Ireland perspective, how you get to Ireland is not really as significant, say, as it might be for airlines, for others who are trying to get their piece of the market. Whether you fly into Ireland, you come by boat, if you swim, it doesn't really make a difference. Getting people to come to Ireland has to be an overall, that's your number one goal.
It is. It is, and we're very lucky in that we've had huge growth in air access, and this week we got our first direct ferry connection to Spain, and we are enjoying a very good period, and supported, I would say, by government policy. We have 0% travel tax, which is a real benefit to airlines, and it keeps prices very competitive. But yeah, getting them there and then making sure that they have an experience they tell everyone about, and you know, social media has made sure that anyone who's having a great holiday in Ireland has a huge reach when they're telling people about it. So getting them there, and then you know, we work very closely with Fáilte Ireland towards Northern Ireland to make sure the experience is exceptional when we get them there.
Alison Metcalf, again, head of North America. Sometimes we think of North America as just the United States, and we hear enough from our Canadian listeners to say you're a little sparse when it comes to defining North America. It's almost like we're the stepchild. Actually, that was one email, so I wouldn't say we're overwhelmed by that. But Canada plays a huge role. It does,
and it's a market that has really grown exponentially over the last 5 years. The biggest challenge we had in Canada up until about 5 years ago was that was around air access. You could get there, but you could only get there in the sort of the peak season of from April to October. And now we've had huge growth, whether it's Air Transat, Air Canada, we have WestJet, Aer Lingus, services from Toronto, new services from Toronto to Shannon this year, from Montreal to Dublin, we've got Vancouver. So this is a market that has grown. It hit the 200,000 visitor mark last year. It represents about 12% of the North American business. Like the US, it's high spending. But Canadians like to tour around even more than Americans. They stay slightly longer. And they love to get into the regions. And there will be a higher propensity of Canadians to travel to Northern Ireland as well. And whilst Siobhan says our goal is to get people to the island, it is absolutely that. But we do have a goal to try and grow business at a slightly faster rate into Northern Ireland. And so we do spend a lot of time trying to encourage people to, and that's where again the Wild Atlantic Way, as I mentioned, is making it easier for us to pull people north. And we're still working from a Canadian perspective to get some direct access back into Northern Ireland, back into Belfast. We have Belfast services from the US with Norwegian, so we have to give people reasons to go to Belfast, go to Northern Ireland, visit the Titanic, and that's a good example of a flagship project and Game of Thrones that is bringing people north.
And Star Wars, I tell you.
What's going on, Adrian?
I don't know. If, like myself, I only watch an occasional segment of any of those, I feel like I should go back and maybe start at the beginning. But it has tremendous attraction, affiliation. Is that mostly for Americans or
For screen tourism?
Yeah, the screen tourism.
No, and not just for Americans. I think, you know, Siobhan mentioned in China, just globally, the power of screen tourism and people, there are people that travel based on movie locations. And I think for us, I mean, using Star Wars with Skellig Michael and other parts along the Wild Atlantic Way and with Northern Ireland, it's actually getting people to look at Ireland, to look at Northern Ireland through a different lens. These are people that may never have considered Ireland, but suddenly because they're a fan of Game of Thrones, Northern Ireland is on their radar. The same thing applies really to Star Wars as well. So it's a great hook. It gives a huge opportunity in the publicity arena to tap into that those specialist markets and really just drive more visitors. So we're happy to have it, and we hope it continues.
A great launch for 2018 for Tourism Ireland, and of course we got to meet and welcome John O'Shaughnessy, who's chairperson of Tourism Ireland. She might be O'Shaughnessy at home. She might have to indeed get used to O'Shaughnessy on this side, but again, of the group of us, I have to say, Alison, that it would be very difficult for us to screw up your name, because Metcalf is Metcalf, and no matter
I'm lucky
what, Alison, again, and of course, a big welcome to Siobhan and to chairperson of Tourism Ireland, John O'Shaughnessy, and friends. As I say on each and every program, even if you're on the way out the door to Ireland and you haven't logged on to Ireland.com, you're not doing yourself any favor. As a matter of fact, if you want any information on Ireland, even if you haven't a notion of going there, get onto Ireland.com. You might change your mind. You're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA.